I'm already being asked by the Korean government to come off my port. What port? I don't have a port.
The North Slope Borough makes the case for oil and gas revenue sharing. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, July 23rd. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, state prosecutors won't be able to plea bargain in some cases anymore.
The Attorney General made a decision to, at least at this time, deal with the cases that are the most serious.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by ConocoPhillips, the easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Obama administration opposes Senator Lisa Murkowski's latest revenue-sharing bill. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the administration says it costs too much money.
Murkowski's so-called FAIR Act would grant at least 27% of outer continental shelf royalties to coastal states. If states establish conservation funds, the allocation would jump 10%. So it's no wonder many coastal leaders, like North Slope Borough Mayor Charlotte Brower, support the plan. She says the revenues would go to major infrastructure improvements.
I'm already being asked by the Korean government to come off my port. What port? I don't have a port in North Slope. I don't have a port in Barrow, Alaska.
Brower is in Washington, where she testified before the Senate Energy Committee about the revenue-sharing bill. The bill would share profits with states for renewable offshore energy, too, not just oil and gas. Its supporters say it levels the playing field between interior states that share energy revenues and coastal states that don't get OCS royalties. The administration says it would cost the federal coffers $6 billion. Pamela Hayes, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Budget at the Department of the Interior, says that increases the deficit too much.
Because these federal lands and resources belong to the public, our goal is to ensure environmentally responsible development with a fair return to the American people, tribes, and individual Indians for the use of the resources.
Fair returns to the American people. The federal government does not see OCS revenue sharing as just that. Murkowski and the bill's co-sponsor, Louisiana Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu, say the money spent up front is worth the potential windfall. They say the money would go to local governments as well as the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Murkowski calls concerns over the bill's costs short-sighted.
If we're talking about just trying to find an offset, we're going to work to find that offset.
An offset is Washington speak for cuts elsewhere in the budget. If this costs the federal government $6 billion in lost money, there needs to be a cut of $6 billion elsewhere. Without that offset, it will be hard to move. At this point, it's unclear whether it can pass the committee, let alone the full Senate. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Attorney General Michael Gerardy is pulling back on state prosecutors' ability to enter into plea agreements in some of the most serious criminal cases. Rick Swobodny is Deputy and Attorney General for the Criminal Division.
The Attorney General for the state of Alaska yesterday informed the prosecutors around the state that he did not want them to be entering into negotiations to resolve cases. Oftentimes people call that plea negotiations or plea agreements in certain cases.
Those cases include unclassified and Type A felonies, cases that involve sexual assault, sexual abuse of children, or domestic violence. It essentially removes the prosecutor's ability to negotiate with the defense to get a guilty plea by offering a lower sentence, something often used to avoid going to trial. The presiding judge will now determine the sentencing in those cases instead of accepting a deal crafted between the prosecution and defense. Again, Rick Swobodny.
Discussions about what appropriate plea negotiations are have been ongoing for a year, but the Attorney General made a decision to, at least at this time, deal with the cases that are the most serious.
Sobodny says the new rule may affect 10% of the state's felony and misdemeanor cases. He says that makes it more likely those cases among the state's most serious will go to trial. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld restrictions on fishing in the Western Aleutians to protect an endangered stock of Steller sea lions. The basic question the court addressed in their opinion was whether the National Marine Fisheries Service violated any statutes when it restricted fishing in the Western Aleutians in 2011. The state of Alaska and fishing industry groups had alleged the closure wasn't justified. Among other things, they argued the agency couldn't prove fishing was causing the sea lion population to decline. In their opinion, the Ninth Circuit disagreed, saying it was enough to show fishing had targeted the same species Steller sea lions usually eat, and that simultaneously the sea lions were under nutritional stress. The immediate impacts of the ruling are limited. The fishing restrictions will remain in place, and NIMS still has to produce an environmental impact statement that was mandated by a lower court. That statement will weigh different management plans and will likely result in changes to the current restrictions. If it does, the agency will have to do a new analysis to see if those regulations comply with the Endangered Species Act, which could open the door to another round of lawsuits. The Matsu Borough Assembly has voted to approve more than $65,000 for the upkeep costs of the motor vessel Susitna. The prototype ferry was constructed by the U.S. Navy and was acquired by the borough in order to provide a means of crossing Knik Arm. The plan to construct suitable docking facilities never came to be, and the ferry remains moored in Ketchikan. From member station KTNA, Philip Manning reports.
The idle Susitna has been a steady drain on borough coffers, and there's not an end in sight. According to budget documents, the borough spent nearly $1.8 million on insurance, storage, and maintenance over the last year. Borough Manager John Moosey spoke to the Assembly regarding the current status of the dormant ferry. Moosey says that efforts to sell the vessel are still underway and that the borough has two offers in hand. While he would not give details on the amounts offered, Moosey says they are significant. An additional concern comes from the responsibility of the Matsu Borough to repay $6 million to the Federal Transit Authority. Moosey says that the FTA would not confirm whether they would accept less than that in the event the ferry sold for a lower amount. The roughly $60,000 the borough spends every month does not cover the cost of insuring the MV Susitna. Moosey says that the insurance is purchased 6 months at a time, and the next bill will come due in October. He says that, in order to avoid having to pay, a deal would likely have to be made by the end of next month. If no deal is made, he believes the borough will be stuck with the boat through the winter. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an environmentally friendly approach to cleaning homes in Anchorage.
Some metal you can clean with a lemon juice, just pure lemon juice. They have a really, really nice result.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Fire managers report progress on the Stewart Creek wildfire east of Fairbanks. Nearly 450 firefighters remain on the blaze, which burned an 85,000-acre area south of Chena Hot Springs Road, until suppression work and rain slowed the flames. Fire Information Officer Maureen Clark said yesterday and today's warm, dry conditions are helping focus suppression work on the fire's still active northeast corner.
Warmer temperatures are drying out the fuels, so that makes the fire smolder a bit more, and that makes it easier for the firefighters to see where there's heat and mop up the fire.
The fire remains 57% contained, Clark says, but an area of fire perimeter on military land will not be officially contained, but monitored and addressed if activity crops up. She says some crews are addressing the inactive southwestern perimeter of the fire.
We've also got additional heavy equipment working on rehabbing dozer lines and other areas where the mat of vegetation was removed, and that's mainly in the southwest area of the fire. And that that post-fire rehabilitation is really important because it stabilizes the soil and it reduces pollution to streams and rivers.
Clark says humidity remains high, but fire managers are anticipating hot, dry conditions by the weekend. She says fire operations along Chena Hot Springs Road remain busy and urges motorists to be cautious. The Valdez Fire Department is investigating the cause of an explosion that happened at the Valdez Small Boat Harbor late Monday morning. As KCHU's Tony Gorman reports, the fire from the explosion left a Fairbanks father and daughter with severe burns.
Owen Guthrie and his family were preparing to go out on the Prince William Sound when they stopped at the Crowley Field Dock to fill up their Bayliner, the Falcon. When Guthrie turned the ignition, the 28-foot vessel exploded. His wife and two of his three daughters were able to escape through a window that blew out during the explosion. Guthrie went back to retrieve the third daughter after she fell into the boat's engine compartment. He and the teenage girl sustained severe burns. The mother and the other girls suffered cuts while escaping. A medic from the nearby Silver Bay Seafoods cannery assisted the family until Valdez fire crews and paramedics arrived on scene. Several workers from the cannery weren't far behind.
I was like right in the corner by where the boat was, and then I just saw people start running into the factory and then telling us to get out that there was a fire, and that's pretty much all they said, and everyone just started running out.
Crews arrived on scene to find the vessel engulfed in flames. Valdez Fire Chief George Keeney says the fire burned through the boat's rope, causing the vessel to go adrift. He said the blaze had also spread to the dock.
The harbor crew was quick. They pushed the skiff back into the dock so we can tie onto it. Meantime, we went ahead and had crews at both locations putting the fires out. So we had fire crews coming over here to the dock trying to get it out quickly. Same time, we're knocking down the one in the boat.
The Coast Guard reopened the harbor to traffic 45 minutes later. Keeney says crews have boomed off the area and still had to fight off hot spots on the boat. The field dock will remain closed for the next 3 to 4 days while officials investigate the cause of the fire. As for Guthrie and his daughter, they were medevaced to the Providence, Alaska Medical Center in Anchorage and later to the Harborview Burn Center in Seattle for further treatment. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
Golden Valley Electric Association has forwarded a new gas trucking proposal. The Interior Electric Co-op submitted the proposal to the state at the request of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority on Friday. ADA and the Alaska Energy Authority are shepherding the North Slope to Fairbanks project and asked GVEA and three other parties interested in partnering with the state for updated proposals last month. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Golden Valley's proposal calls for the nonprofit co-op to contribute $20 million in cash, as well as engineering, access to a gas supply contract with BP, and land on the North Slope and in North Pole for liquefaction and regasification facilities. GVEA President and CEO Corey Borgeson says the utility's North Pole power plant could be switched from oil to gas to lower electric rates.
We believe from the pricing and the looking at what that fuel would cost, that it would be much cheaper than the naphtha that we're currently burning out there. So we believe that we can operate our North Pole plant much more efficiently and cost-effectively with gas. So as a ratepayer, that's where we think there's a direct benefit.
Borgeson says gas retrofit of older oil-burning generators, as well as purchase of a new gas-fired unit, are also possible depending on the cost of natural gas trucked in from the North Slope. He says direct investment in the trucking project increases benefits for GVEA members.
We're a not-for-profit organization, and we are regulated both economically and geographically by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. There will be complete transparency. There won't be investors that will need to be paid back with Golden Valley's investment. And we have proposed to ADA that to the extent we've loaned or put money into the project as an investment, that we would seek to get a return somewhere that would be 3 percentage points above the cost of us borrowing the funds. so that the cost of us investing in it would be covered by the project and not pushed passed on to our electric members.
The state is reviewing GVEA's proposal and others from Fairbanks Natural Gas, Spectrum Energy, and the borough's Interior Gas Utility to select a primary gas trucking project partner. The project's goal is to get a cleaner-burning, lower-cost fuel to Fairbanks and other communities for electrical generation and space heating. The state legislature approved over $300 million in financing to leverage the project, which is not penciled out for the private sector. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
It might not seem like baking soda could do the work of bleach, but Alaska Community Action on Toxics suggests that there are effective alternatives to potentially harmful household cleaners. The Anchorage-based nonprofit's Green Cleaning Service disinfects a growing number of the city's homes and businesses with everyday items like vinegar solution and vegetable oil soap. And they say they're getting good results. APRN's Sarah Bernard reports.
It's like any other cleaning service. Three workers holding buckets and spray bottles and sponges are going through a large house top to bottom, making the place sparkle. But here, there's no bleach, no chemical soaps, no electric blue toilet bowl cleaner.
You are able to clean just with salt. You can leave the glass with salt for probably 24 hours and clean the next day, and the glass become almost brand new.
Green Cleaning Service manager Antonio Waikivil says his team uses non-toxic products to clean everything from the bathroom to the kitchen, from metal to glass. Sometimes the products they use are kind of surprising. If you wanted, you could eat them.
And other thing that we use is lemon juice. If you know some metal, you can clean with the lemon juice, just pure lemon juice. They have a really, really nice result.
Alaska Community Action on Toxics, or ACAT, has been running a green cleaning service for the past 2 years with clients across Anchorage. ACAT claims some chemicals included in very common household cleaning products, even cleaning products labeled green, have been linked to health issues such as cancer, asthma, and reproductive ailments. But all of the products the Green Cleaning Service uses, whether they're homemade or purchased, are verified by ACAT's in-house research on toxic contaminants. ACAT provides free estimates and asks for a suggested donation of $25 per employee per hour of cleaning. The program also offers tips for creating your own non-toxic products.
We try to teach and change a little bit lifestyle. That's the main goal. Janitorial services, you can find that many janitorial services. The idea to create this kind of mission-related business is to change a little bit lifestyle and people, and show them they can have an alternative.
Before coming to ACAT, Waikivil was the Refugee Services Coordinator at Catholic Social Services, helping newly arrived immigrants find jobs in Anchorage. The Chilean expat now employs two refugees from Somalia.
Just need to map.
Okay.
Yeah. And you see if you already took the trash?
Yep.
Since the business has grown a lot, especially in the last few months, he plans to hire a third person.
I know the need of people who are newcomers in the United States, and I want to give opportunity to them.
One of the team's clients, Melissa Faust, says she appreciates that aspect too.
What I like about it is that I'm supporting a nonprofit that's doing important work and also providing employment to people who need it.
Plus, she says, she prefers having fewer chemical smells around.
I've had plenty of bleach exposure in my life, and I'm done with that.
Waikivil points out that winters are long here, and most Alaskans spend a lot of time indoors, increasing exposure to potentially harmful chemicals. And what's flushed down the drain can end up affecting watersheds and wildlife, too.
If we try to be environment friendly, I believe that's the best thing that you can do in your life, and I'm really proud for that.
And maybe it's just nice to know that if you're looking for a lemon-scented cleaner, you could try a lemon. In Anchorage, I'm Sarah Bernard.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
It's been another year of low king salmon numbers to many of the major river systems in Alaska, but one of the biggest king runs in the state is doing quite well. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The king salmon that return to the Nooshigak River are highly prized by subsistence, sport, and commercial fishermen. Through Sunday, the king salmon escapement to the Nooshigak River was counted at over 107.8 thousand fish. That is well above the escapement goal of 95,000 kings. Jason Dye is the local area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Division of Sport Fish. He labels this year's Nooshigak River King Run as a success story.
A lot of places in the state are not, you know, the King Runs are not achieving their goals. And the last 2 years here on the Nooshigak, we've exceeded the in-river goal. So, yeah, I would say it's been a success the last couple years.
The idea that this year's King Run to the Nooshigak River should be considered a success story is shared by Chris Carr, who's a member of the local Fish and Game Advisory Committee for the Nooshigak River region.
We've pretty much had a pretty good steady run of good-sized king this year, starting earlier June. We haven't seen that in a while. And I'd say we're pretty strong and healthy.
This year, sport fishermen on the Nooshigak River had to adjust to some regulatory changes approved last December by the Alaska Board of Fisheries. Carr says perhaps the most dramatic change was to make the Nooshigak River a single-hook river year-round, including during the king salmon fishery.
The word got out, you know, the sports fishermen were cooperative with it, I guess. You know, it was really no big deal. I think just for us local guys that have to have the single hook for the whole year, they're kind of a little upset about it. But for the majority of the sportsmen, for the kings, they're living with it.
Many of the sport fishing guides and the individual fishermen that target kings are accustomed to only fishing with a single hook. But Carr says many of the locals who live along the river had to adjust the way they fish for other species in the river.
As long as I've been here, you know, we've always used a triple hook pixie for pike. You know, when you're going up river, I'd always see the kids on the beach fishing silvers with their pixies, treble hooks, you know, and that was kind of like, you know, catch and cook. A guy would catch a fish and run up to his mom and give him a meal. But going single hook on all species, I didn't agree with.
The escapement of kings and other salmon species to the Nooshigak River is counted using a sonar array placed in the river near Portage Creek, and that counting project is expected to stay up and running through the middle of next month. Fish and Game's Jason Dye confirms that the passage of kings remained fairly steady nearly all season long, despite the intense commercial fishing pressure in the Nooshigak District targeting sockeye salmon.
It's tough to say exactly what caused that, but more than likely it's something to do with the way the kings move through the district. They may have moved through different channels that they typically don't move through, or they may have moved a little deeper and gotten underneath the gear. So it's hard to say, but it's likely something along those lines. But yeah, you're right. We did see significant escapement during the commercial sockeye fishery.
This year's sockeye run to Bristol Bay, and specifically the Nooshigak District, was very early, perhaps as much as 8 days early. Dye says the king run also showed up a little early. The king salmon run to the Nooshigak River is the largest king salmon run in Bristol Bay and is one of the largest king runs in the state of Alaska. The run was strong enough this year that no sport fishing or subsistence restrictions were needed to achieve the escapement goal. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Little Diomede is a remote island off the coast of western Alaska, a community of about 150 people that sits perched on cliffs. There's no runway for airplanes during the summer, and weather conditions can often limit transportation year-round. But thanks to a renewed helicopter service contract, island community members can have access to food and mail and even travel to receive health care. KNOM's Margaret DeMariabus reports.
A contract for essential air service between Little Diomede and Nome has been renewed for a second year. Ericsson Air Crane, based out of Portland, Oregon, announced the renewal last week. The air service contract with the Department of Transportation was awarded to Evergreen Helicopters. a subsidiary of the aviation services company. Captain Mike Manis has been with Evergreen Helicopters in Nome for over a year. He pilots the German BO-105 helicopter that flies between Little Diomede and Nome year-round.
There's no runway there because the cliffs are, you know, really steep on the sides of the mountain. They built out a heliport over the water that only a helicopter can land. And so I'm the person who brings them all their stuff.
This is only the second year the DOT contract has been available. That means passenger service is relatively new to the island, something very different than what was available in the past.
People had to try to get off the island on the mail run, and it was just a space available basis, and sometimes people would be stuck on Diomede for a week or two to get off, or stuck in Wales for a week or two to get back to the island, and with actual reservations for seats, it's allowed people on the island to get back and forth off the island a lot easier.
Manis says the renewed contract provides passenger and freight service each Monday, cycling from Nome to Little Diomede and onto Wales, and eventually back to Nome. He says he can take up to 4 passengers on each leg, as well as up to 50 pounds of freight per person. It costs $200 each way. Manis says this is an important service that benefits community members.
You have to get off the island onto the mainland somehow so that you can do anything, even to like go to the hospital or something. People were not able to do that on a timely basis.
Prior to working with Evergreen Helicopters, Manis has flown Black Hawks in the Army and piloted to oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. He says this is not an easy place to fly with the cold weather and severe conditions, but it's a job he enjoys.
I'm happy to do it. So, you know, it's an interesting job. And it's not an easy one, but it's a good one. And the people appreciate being able to get off the island.
Additionally, the company has a separate contract with the U.S. Postal Service. Manis flies mail and food to Little Diomede each Wednesday. In Nome, I'm Margaret DiMaioribus.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dave Benninger and Mike Mason in Dillingham, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Tony Gorman in Valdez, Margaret DiMaioribus in Nome. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Sarah Bernard from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.